is Felger and Mass.
Yeah, Rex Ryan here.
I hate guests.
Yep.
There's no reason to touch them.
Keep it in your pants.
Why would you do that? Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
A one-year, $5 million extension for 41-year-old Zdeno Chara. How do you feel about it, David in Maine? Go ahead, David.
Oh, hey, I got a quick question for you. How do you tell who the rookies are on the ice? They pass the puck to Chara. And I bet if anybody would do a survey on Chara's turnovers, it would be up around 80%.
So you don't like him? You don't like the extension? You don't like Chara the player anymore?
Well, not anymore, no. I mean, as a defender, he's still good, but, boy, don't give him the puck.
Yeah, no, he's
going to the other team.
I mean, I think he's okay with the puck. He's, I think, a little better than he's better than the callers give him credit for. He's okay with the puck. Do you want to know the thing that bothers me the most about his offensive game? Is that he doesn't wind up for full slap shots anymore. The guy's got a record NHL slap shot, and they're all three-quarter wedges now. I don't know why. He started doing that a couple years ago. But, like,
Maybe it takes him too long.
How come I don't get the big back scratcher, 100-mile-an-hour slap shot anymore? He doesn't do it anymore. Like that's the only thing. But his offensive game is his offensive game. But I just think, man, he's been big for you this year. I think he's gotten better this year in the previous two. And if it's just from eating vegetables or whatever, I don't care what it is. He's gotten a little bit of that Brady Ortiz, you know. What are you doing at 40? God bless you. Whatever. Smoke him if you got him. He's doing it. And now that he's not, you know, he did lead the team in minutes on D, but McAvoy's right there. And he's now really your number two or going to soon be your number three defenseman, ideally. And I think his intangibles are growing by the day and all that. I'm into it. I'm into Chara. I like him more by the day.
I got no problem with it at all. I mean, really. I think that I thought 2 years ago he was heading down fast, and then it is reversed a little bit, and this year took a significant step forward.
So look, the matchups are going to matter against Toronto. When you watch him out there, you're probably going to go, oh man, this guy's slow and old and toast because he can't keep up with that speed. If you play Pittsburgh and Crosby, you're going to want Zdeno Chara out there. If anyone crawls in the head of Sid, it's Zdeno Chara, and that's always been a great matchup for the Bruins and a great matchup for Chara. You're going to want Chara out there for that. Stamkos, I don't know, probably somewhere in between. But as a defender, still pretty good.
Toronto scares the crap out of me for all of them. That team's forwards can fly.
Who do we got here? We have got, let's slip in a Red Sox thought. You know, they promised Red Sox action. Steven Billricka, go ahead. What do you got, Steve?
Hey, I have a question for Maz on this coming year. First of all, a question, Maz. What do you think the biggest problem was with the Red Sox last year?
Shortage of a middle of the order bat, and I don't want to say pure power, but a dangerous hitter.
Can I give you number two?
Sure,
compete.
Yeah.
Let me give you their biggest problem last year was timely hitting in important spots. And let me say something. When they lost Stanton, they lost probably the last piece to the puzzle of one of the best complementary teams in baseball. And that's why that Stanton loss hurts so much.
Okay, but timely hitting. Didn't they have a really good record in close and late and one-run game? Like they were awful at that 2 years ago. And then last year they actually put up good numbers in those situations, I thought.
So I was just trying to look it up with, like, you know, two outs and runners in scoring position. I actually think their numbers were pretty good.
I thought they were good in that regard last year.
Yeah, and so I'll get you the exact number. Give me a minute.
Okay, 617-779-0985. Derek in the car on the Patriots. Hi, Derek.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to call in. Hey, I had the privilege of going to Gillette and actually being on the field and watching, this was a few years ago, watching Jimmy Garoppolo warm up. And I was no more than 10, 15 feet away from him. And when he threw the ball, it was zip. I mean, like, you could hear it hiss. So that's all, you know.
Got it. So we got that scouting report from the field.
I mean, it's the same thing if Zolak throws a football at you, too. You take from that. You throw it in tight windows and traffic with someone chasing you down, all this other stuff. You know, come on.
He can. I think Garoppolo's thing is going to be, can you stay on the field? And can you stay within yourself where you're not running around making mistakes, you know, putting the ball on the ground or, you know, trying to bite off more than you can chew and making too many big plays and getting sloppy with the ball. That's going to be his thing. He can throw the football. He can obviously process the game. Can you stay within yourself and limit your mistakes? He should be good.
Yeah, I mean, I like what I saw in San Francisco. There were some mistakes there. Look, they had him. They had him. I mean, I don't think, to me, I don't know that we can debate the guy's ability anymore. I think it's there.
Okay, here's our
by the way, the Red Sox were third in the league in batting average with two outs and runners in scoring position.
Thank you.
But what they didn't do was extra base hits with runners in scoring. Like, to me, those hits can't just be a one-run single. Those are the ones when you get multiple guys on, you blast one out of the ballpark or into the gap, and instead of a one-run hit, you've got a three-run hit or a two-run hit. And now all of a sudden you've broken a game open. I think that, and I believe in the presence thing. There were certain guys that step into that box that the pitcher goes, whoop, I got to stay on this quarter of the plate or it's going out of the ballpark. And I don't think they have that guy.
Okay, here's our international business mogul with 7 locations spanning across the globe, Dakota in Braintree. Hi, Dakota.
So before I get to my Bruins take, Mike, I need to thank you about spreading the rumor about my business and financial constraints, because when I got to my favorite watering hole, I didn't have to pick up tab last night. I was getting offered drinks thinking I was in this Malaise, and I get the Starbucks, same thing this morning. So I get everything for free because people are trying to give back to everything I've given them. So I want to thank you for
Malaise? That. Is that what you call? You mean Malaise?
Malaise. I said Malaise.
You said Malaise. Malaise.
Oh, I just got back from Montreal, Tony, the office up there.
Okay,
so
yeah, that's right.
You know,
oh, yeah, that's so, right. That's one of your 7 North America locations.
That's correct.
Yeah, the other 6 are on the North Shore.
You're pretty funny. All right, so anyways, so when Claude Julien got fired and Cassidy took over, right, we all said, all right, we don't know what Cassidy's going to do. But then immediately he did something that Claude Julien wasn't able to do, and that was actually win at home. And that's because that Claude Julien gets to decide the matchups of who's going to put on the ice, because the away team has to throw out their guys first, and
that's
the
right.
Home team matches up, right? And immediately, Claude Julien could only win on the road because he didn't have to figure out the matchup. He let the other people in their stadium figure out the bad matchup. So now, obviously, Cassidy has come in last year, has done a great job. This year, you'd say he's done a great job?
Tremendous.
Okay. Is it fair to say right now that you could say that that was the right move? Or do we need to wait 2 to 5 years for this thing to see how it plays out?
No. It was the right move. But to say that he's a good coach, we need time.
So you don't think you have a large enough sample, being the hockey expert that you are, that he's not a good coach?
No, we don't have enough sample. We don't have enough sample.
Well, when you take a team that you had written off, okay, and a lot of people had wrote them off. You're
Dakota, you're trying to get me, and you're not. I'm telling you, we need more sample on Cassidy to know if he's a good coach.
So what constitutes a good coach?
Year after year, consistency, overcoming adversity, solving big problems. And he's done it this year, but that's 1 year. To be a great coach, Dakota, you got to do it year after year.
He did it at the end of last year, too, because he actually rejuvenated.
He hasn't won a playoff series yet. I'm not going to call him a great coach. I'm sorry.
Did I ask you to call him a great coach?
What's your point, Dakota?
He's trying to go back to the thing that giving Danny Ainge, the case is closed on the Danny Ainge trades.
What I'm trying to say is,
he's bringing up yesterday's argument.
The case is closed that we could say that the move to hire Cassidy last year was a good one.
No.
Can you at least say that?
Firing Claude was the right move. The jury's out on Cassidy.
So you don't think hiring Cassidy was a good move yet? You need more of a sample.
I think firing Claude was the right call, and I think we need more sample on Cassidy to know if he's a great coach.
Wait a minute.
How could you possibly compare that kind of move to a draft pick, Dakota?
We're not saying great coach. Why do you keep trying to put words in my mouth when I've never once said great coach?
How could you compare a coaching change to a draft pick of an 18- or 19-year-old kid?
No, you're doing that. You're
doing it. You said yesterday that if Fultz turns out to be a better player than Tatum, you're selling your 7 businesses worldwide.
No, I'm giving them to Tony, not selling them.
I see.
There's a difference.
Yeah, a coaching change is different than a draft pick. And is different than a trade. You need to see how all those things play out. A coaching change, especially if the old guy has to be fired, you can close the book on the Farrell thing. He needed to go. Done. You won't know about Cora for a couple years.
I mean, to me, that was my, I actually brought up that point on the Baseball Reporters last night. Was it more about getting rid of Farrell, or is it more about hiring Cora? and it's the first thing. It was about getting rid of Farrell. And in that case, it was getting rid of Clo. Now, look, I think Cassidy can coach. Now, will he burn himself out here? Like, what happens when... I don't know that they've had a real sort of crisis yet.
They really haven't. I mean, there's a ton of injuries early in the year, but other than some a-holes who were writing them off for the year, for the most part, everyone said, well, they got a long way to go.
Exactly.
So it wasn't like exactly a crisis point.
And if you go back to last year, and I think Cassidy already got better at this, like at the beginning of last year when he first took over, do you remember... He was pretty blunt. I thought that this isn't going to last. He's going to piss guys off to no end. And I think he dialed it back a little. So, but in terms of the style they play.
Oh, man.
I mean, they are fun to watch, man. He delivered.
They sorely needed it. But you haven't heard me do backflips over Cassidy because he might in time turn out to be great. And he's been tremendous this year. But he's not the only one who coaches this up-tempo thing. I mean, in fact, most of the hockey world is gone there. You just happen to have one of the few that were still in the other way, you know. So it really was about Claude. Cassidy's not the only one who would come in here and tell the defenseman to take the ice in front of him. There's more than one coach who does that, by the way.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Felger. I like anti-coupable.
And Mass.
Stupid. They're so stupid.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Made back Brady up for a couple of years.
I'll go to New England in a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat?
In a heartbeat.
That's not too much pressure.
No,
following
never,
up.
Never.
The,
you
the go.
There's a competition that he would be confident in going into, and that's the second string position. Brian Hoyer, Johnny Manziel both played together in Cleveland, so that second string competition will be as high as ever, and it'll also be like a memory for both of them, and the best man will prevail.
Belichick brought in Tebow one time. I mean, why not bring in Manziel? We'll see him in training camp.
So that's Johnny Manziel coming out of a club a couple weeks ago, Murray?
Yeah. Yep. Los Angeles coming out of a club clean and sober.
Okay. That doesn't concern you a little bit that he's going to a club?
Nope.
Come on.
No, it doesn't.
Murray.
Mike, it doesn't. You don't have to go to a club and get all left up.
If you're an alcoholic and you're in recovery,
you don't?
You don't go to clubs.
Says who? What if you want to test yourself?
Who says who? AA.
Yeah, what the hell do they know? You got to test yourself, I think.
Do you really feel that way? Honestly.
It works for some people. Different strokes for different folks. Maybe it's different for Manziel. He didn't need to go through the program. And he's deciding, okay, I'm clean. It's time for me to actually have a second act here. But I still want to have a little bit of fun. So I'm going to take me, my fiance, I'm going to go to the club. She can have a good time. And I'll sit here with club sodas all night.
See, usually the teaching is to stay out of environments in which you are vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're soft.
Oh, God, Murray.
But the point is, you are soft.
You are soft. That's the whole point. That's why you're an addict.
To acknowledge your weakness, and you stay out of those environments in which you are vulnerable.
Maybe that's how it is for some people, but for Manziel, maybe it's different. Maybe he's saying, you know what, I'm going to try to test myself and put myself in this environment where I was weak before. Look at me now, I'm strong. So strong that I can also prove that I should be the next quarterback of the New England Patriots.
Interesting theory.
So I'm not even worried about that. I mean, I think it's a horrible sign that he's still going to clubs, even if he's staying drinking club soda. I think that's just recipe for disaster. But like, I don't even care about that piece because if he does fall off the wagon here, he's gone in less than a second. So that's not going to be a problem. The only downside is if he's just a waste of time, if he's just not going to be a great NFL quarterback, then what's the point? Unless he can be, like, I'm not grooming him to be your backup. I don't care about the backup thing. Like,
well, he'll have to be, but when Brady's done, he should be the starter. You groom him to be the starter.
Okay, so the only calculus is his ceiling that of a high-end NFL starter? Do we think there's a chance to get him there?
Yes.
Is there a 25% chance, a 10% chance we can develop this guy into an NFL starter? And if the answer is yes, then you take a shot.
Oh, I would take the shot. Again, I feel the game's gone that way. Look at the mobile quarterbacks now around the league. It just seems to be the whole league has shifted that way. And I'm not saying that means that you have to also, because you obviously have a guy that's a traditional pocket passer, and he's the best of all time still. But I think that, and I'm telling you, I think McDaniel's on some level, because I think this is his guy. I don't think this is Belichick straight up. I think McDaniels is the one that says, let's take a flyer on this guy. And that they may end up bringing him in as a result. But I think McDaniels would love a mobile quarterback.
Phil in South Boston, what do you think, Phil?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good.
Good. So let's just hypothetically say the Pats bring in Manziel. He does get some sort of contract offer. What type of numbers are you guys thinking?
Oh.
It'd probably have to be a
veteran minimum $900,000, no incentives, and
non-guaranteed.
Oh, it will be automatically non-guaranteed. That's it. You get what any scrub, I say with all respect to my heart, but rookie free agent, undrafted guy at the bottom of the roster, veteran minimum, no incentives, take it or leave it. He said he'd play for free.
Yeah, this is not about the money for him anyway. Like, this is, you want to play.
He tweeted that he said he would play for free. He's obviously joking, but he would take the league minimum to get another shot.
Continue with your calls. Devin and Quincy with the Red Sox thought from Maz. Hi, Devin. Devin.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good. What do you got?
I was just wondering if you guys think that Hanley could step it up this year. I know he had a tough year last year, but I see him have the monumental piece to give us that extra push as an offense. Do you think come July, you think Mitch Moreland will be there at first base every day, or do you think Hanley will have it all year round?
So I would never, ever, ever rely on Hanley Ramirez. Okay? I don't think you can do that. But if you're asking me, do I think that first base could bring the best out in him and that Alex Cora could get through to him? Yeah, I do. I do. I mean, what was his best year in Boston? 2016. He played 133 games at first base. So, I don't think that's a coincidence. No, it might have been more the fact that David Ortiz was in his final season and Hanley wanted to play for Ortiz. So he wanted to be in the lineup for him. Ortiz was the DH. There was only one option. That was it. But I think that he wants to play for Cora, too.
Just quickly.
Yeah. Has there been any issue with Hanley at all this spring?
I barely heard his name.
None. Right? None. Nothing. He hasn't complained about playing first base. He's been healthy.
Had his glove.
Right. All of it. All of it. And I'm telling you, to me, that's a really good sign.
TJ and Newton, hi.
What's going on, fellas?
What do you got?
Just a little thought on Johnny Manziel. You know, I think it would be a great acquisition if we could get him for cheap. I just think that based on what I saw at him at A&M with having Mike Evans, going back to 2012, their sophomore year, Mike Evans had a third of his touchdown catches. I just think he needs an immaculate receiver, probably a top five in order to be successful.
Okay, how's Rob Gronkowski? I mean, does every quarterback want a great receiver? What does that mean? He had Mike Evans. Great. Yes, it helped.
The movie star? Is that what you're talking about, Rob Gronkowski? Yeah, I mean, I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried because
if the guy can play, he can play. If he can't, he can't. The receiver, if he's got great receivers, he'll be better. If he doesn't, he'll be worse. But you'll be able to tell if he can play or not. It doesn't matter who's out there.
I mean, the Patriots aren't going to send him out there without any players. Like, I'm not worried about them getting him a stud receiver. Let's find out if he can stay sober.
Thank you. Start with that and learn the playbook. Sean and Marlborough on the Sox. Hi, Sean.
Hey, guys. I heard something yesterday, but let me ask you guys a question. Who do you think is better, the Yankees or the Red Sox?
Yankees.
Yanks.
Okay. So I know, Felger, you love the David Price signing, and Maz, you love the J.D. Martinez signing, and you guys were both thrilled that...
What are you talking about?
It's sarcasm.
Thank you. Okay, see, right. I don't get sarcasm. I'm not smart enough for sarcasm.
And everyone was happy that we decided to go with J.D. Martinez over Giancarlo Stanton. Do you guys know that with Stanton, the Yankees are $55 million lower on the payroll this year than the Red Sox? The Red Sox have the highest payroll in baseball. And we're talking about if they'll be like the first or second wild card team in the American League.
Sean, I think it is one of the underplayed stories in baseball, for sure, maybe in all of sports. How the Red Sox could be a second-tier team with by far the highest payroll.
Yeah, so I called a couple years ago, and I said, give the GM, the new GM of the Red Sox and the Bruins, give them both a couple of years. Well, now we're a couple of years in, and I'm done with Dombrowski.
I mean, the question is, they're still young, too. It's like they have all these guys who are not even arbitration. Like Devers, Benintendi. Is Betts arbitration yet? He is
first year.
So Betts was a first-year arbitration. Bradley was a So you have all these guys who are just entering arbitration, like half your lineup, and you've still got the highest payroll. Like, how did they get there?
And I'll tell you what, I think his estimate was low. I think they're actually about $65 million ahead of the Yankees.
I mean, it's stunning.
It is. It's crazy. And it is. It's a $230 million payroll. They have an astronomical payroll.
And you've got, like, Devers and Benintendi are on minimum deals, right?
Basically, yeah. Yeah, basically. I mean, I don't know what Benintendi's making this year. I'm going to guess, like, I don't know, 600 grand or something.
So they have two guys on minimum deals. Your catcher doesn't make anything. Neither of your catchers make anything. You got two other guys who just entered arbitration years. There's five or six guys, and you've got the highest payroll in baseball. Like,
right.
How did that happen?
Well, so they're still paying Sandoval, right? He's still on their books. But if you want to really sort of get scary about it, the number does not even include Ruzne Castillo.
I was going to say, Castillo, Alan Craig, all those guys?
Craig's off the books now. I think he's completely gone. But Castillo's got one or two more years at $10 million, and he doesn't even count.
They don't have to count him?
They don't have to count him because he's not on the 40-man roster. They took him off.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that ridiculous?
So that is, like, that's a, there's a show in and of itself.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. You're listening to Felger and Maz.
Doesn't always have to be ha-ha-hee-hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
And we worked through through some challenges throughout our communication, but the collaborative effort to land on a one-year deal really speaks to Zdeno's commitment to the Boston Bruins and understanding, exploring some flexibility as we continue to build this team in the direction, and him being a big, big part of our current success as well as our future success. I will not be surprised if we're sitting here and because he's indicated that he wants to continue to play. You know, this is based on performance. Obviously, his longevity with our hockey club, his importance to our hockey club in a leadership role.
This is, you know, thank God Peter Chiarelli's not still here, because, you know, this would be a multi-year deal and you'd look at and go, well, wait a minute. McAvoy's coming up in 2 years. DeBrusque is coming up. Heinen's coming up. Donato's going to have to get paid in 2 years. Donato signed only a 2-year deal. You have to pay all these. Carlo's up after this year, I think. All these restricted guys get paid now. So you can't just, it's not like, so you can't just go out handing these contracts out like lollipops at the dentist office. You got to really think about it. And so the key here, obviously, was for the Bruins to get him on a one-year deal, and Don's thanking him for understanding our position. And then he started to say, I wouldn't be surprised if we're right back here next year with the same thing. With, you know, so they have some sort of handshake or some sort of gentleman's agreement that if you still want to do this and you still look the way you should look, we'll be right back here next year and do it again. But we gotta leave our flexibility open because we got to sign all these kids.
Well, and to me, this is the right way to do it because Char is at that stage where it's year to year. And you know what? And good for Char. Like, again, I told you earlier, like,
Char is a free agent. He could have easily gone out and gotten a 2 or 3 year deal.
Absolutely, he could have. So I was just about to say earlier in the show, I said to you, what's more impressive to you? Tom Brady doing what he does at his age or Chara? And I told you, I would take Chara. I think playing defenseman in the NHL at age 40 is tougher than playing quarterback.
So you think what Char is doing is more impressive than what Brady's doing?
I'm not talking about the level of performance. Well, Brady's obviously better.
You have to factor that in. I mean, Char is now the 15th, the 20th best defenseman in the league, the 25th best defenseman in the league. Brady's still the best quarterback in the league.
Who gets hit more?
Chara. But I had to think about it. They play 82 games, but, you know, per capita, it's Brady gets hit a crap ton.
I'm just telling, in my estimation, you have to be in better shape to do what Char is doing than Brady's.
Was Brady sacked 30, 40 times this year?
Char might get hit 30 times in a week. Like,
it was that much. There's not a ton of hitting anymore in the league.
Okay, but he's 40. So, and he's still playing 22 minutes a night.
I would say from a cardiovascular standpoint, yes, it's harder to do what Char is doing.
So that's all I'm saying. I'm not telling you that he's better. I'm just telling you that Brady feeds me the bag of nuts or tries to sell me the bag of nuts, and I'd buy him off of this guy before I bought him off of Brady. But that aside, Brady also does contract favors for the Patriots, right?
Yep.
Didn't Char just do one right here?
I think he did. I think he easily could have gotten multiple years on the market, and he took one here.
It's not apples to apples. Okay, I'm not. Obviously, Brady's on a level unto himself. I'm just telling you, I'm impressed by Chara's commitment, his work ethic, his professionalism, his team mentality. He should get credit for all of that.
All right,
Jack. And he doesn't have to sell me a bag of nuts to do it.
Jack in Boston on Johnny Manziel. You want him here?
Yeah, I do want him here. I just have one quick point. Like, a lot of the callers or the argument against having him here is people calling and say, I mean, look at his stats when he was an NFL quarterback. I want to know your guys' opinion on, besides the elite like Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Drew Brees, what quarterback that was put in that situation with that Cleveland Browns team, with those Cleveland Browns coaches, would have lit it up?
Agreed.
He still should have had a better showing than he had there. I mean, he had no commitment to practicing. He even admitted, and I think it was the last game of the season and his last time. His
he
last
showed
season
up drunk?
There. Yeah, oh no, he bounced out early to go to Vegas and he put on the blonde wig and he was partying and he lied to the whole coaching staff saying like, oh no, he was somewhere else. And he since has owned up to it. But his commitment to, you know, to actually being a professional was minimal at best.
So that's it. And stat, I could care less about stats. How, where's your head, you know, how do you see a defense? How can you read the playbook? How's the ball come out of your hand? Like, all those things. I don't care what the stats were. I'd throw out the stats at A&M. I'd throw out the stats in Cleveland.
See, but to me, the fact that he wasn't committed there is part of the reason I'm still willing to give him another chance. Because had he been fully invested and played like garbage, well, I'd say he has no talent. But I look at him and say, no, he didn't try. I mean, it didn't work in Cleveland because they didn't coach him, they didn't discipline him, and he didn't try. If he's willing to apply himself, could it work? Let's find out.
Okay, unfortunately, I brought up some nonsense about the icing rule and the power play. I'm sorry I did it. Tim, I don't want to leave you on the line, so just please be quick. Go ahead. What do you got?
That's okay. I'm a little older than you, Felly. I remember watching hockey when you weren't allowed to ice when you were man down. They changed it. I want to say when I was young, mid-70s, so it might line up with what you said, the Canadian teams in the mid-70s when they were a powerhouse. But I can remember when you were not allowed to ice it on the when you were man down, and they changed it so you could.
Tim, so. We haven't been able to confirm that anywhere. You're the only guy who was on the same acid trip as me. Because what we think I was – because who the hell knows what I'm talking about?
No, he was watching Hartford and the WHA.
The WHA did not let you ice it on the power play. So maybe we were watching the World Hockey Association. What I was thinking of was it used to be in the NHL that you couldn't come out of the box if you scored. You had to sit in there all 2 minutes no matter what happened. And then the Canadians in the 50s and Maurice Richard and like that group would score 3 goals of power play till the league had to say, well, this is getting silly. If you score, you get to come out of the box. That's what I was thinking about.
Yeah, the Bruins didn't score. They were taking shots from the point. Seriously, that's another thing is the Bruins power play now. All they used to do was take slap shots from the point, and they all get turned away. We got 8 shots on the power play. Yeah, but they all sucked. But now they're getting guys in the slot down by down at the bottom of the faceoff circle, roofing things, knocking the water bottle into the air. I don't know who they are. I don't recognize them.
Nate in Lincoln with the Red Sox take. Hi, Nate.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I had a quick question. You guys are talking about who's going to step up to be a big, consistent hitter for the Red Sox this season. And I was wondering your thoughts on Mookie Betts. I know he didn't have that great of a season last year, but do you think he can step up into that leadership position as well as the top performer position? Just want to hear your guys' thoughts.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think Mookie's got a shot at that. But see, my question is always this, okay? If you're the opposing team and a guy comes up in a big spot at Fenway, where are you going to pitch him? How do you pitch him? And Mookie, I pitch away. Because he's not going to hit it into the bullpens. So, and this is where they run into a problem. A team that does its research, and it's not even that hard, but to me, a team that's prepared, has talent, will come in and look at you and say, I'll just pitch you to the opposite field all day long, and you're not going to beat me. And to me, this is why they need J.D. Martinez. They need Hanley. They need those guys to start belting the ball out of the ballpark like the Astros do, because then all of a sudden, then you're on the mound scratching your head, and now you're timid, now you're defensive, now you're afraid. And they need that guy. If Martinez isn't that guy, they're going to be the same team they were last year.
But in terms of this thing we talk about, leadership and the tone of the team and whose team, Mookie Betts can be that guy.
See, I think so, too. And I think his stance and contract talks tells you that. That inside of him, he's not going to compromise. So why that doesn't come out more on the field, I don't know. But I hope they get to the point, and maybe the manager's part of it. Maybe the manager gets them all comfortable enough where they feel like they can throw a nutty on the field and it's not going to be held against. I don't know. I don't know if that's it or not. But to me, they hold back. There's something that they don't let it all out.
Ryan on Cape Cod on the Bees. Hi, Ryan.
Yes, I'm going to be making a call about the offsides rule that NHL has right now. And how many times the coaches match has overturned the Bruins on that call. Don't you think it's pretty unfair that the Bruins can be in the opposing team zone for minutes because we're so good in other people's zones? It can be minutes, and yet we can score, and they can challenge it. The coach can challenge it, and...
Yes, I think that, it's not just a Bruins thing, please. It's not like they're targeting the Bruins or something, caller. But it is a little silly to have zone time of a minute and have the other team touch the puck and possess the puck. But just because it doesn't exit the zone, you can go all the way back to where it entered the zone and say that was offsides. There's an easy change there, and that is if the opposing team touches the puck at any point, you can't go back and, you've had a chance to possess and clear the puck and you don't do it. Then you can't challenge that offsides. I think the offsides thing this year has been much better. it's punitive. And Paul Maurice, the coach there in Winnipeg, is going to be, if he didn't realize it last night, is going to be reluctant to do that thing again last night because that almost cost his team.
Oh, I thought it was a huge mistake. Again, when Heinen scored and made it 3-2, they challenged it, and it didn't appear to me that it was conclusive. And I just felt like it was too gray. They weren't going to flip it. He took a penalty there for his team and put the Bruins right back on a 5-on-3.
This icing rule. Jermaine in East Boston, you have an idea for us?
Yes, well, I can't tell you about the 1950s Montreal Canadiens, but what I can tell you is about the 2018 Master Youth Hockey. In Pee Wee, it is a penalty. You cannot ice the puck in Pee Wee when you're on a penalty kill, which I think is the dumbest rule ever because...
Well, you're Wiggy, you're wrong as usual, Jermaine.
No, it's the rule. You cannot ice the puck in Pee Wee when you are on a penalty kill. It's an icing call, which I think is the dumbest rule out there. I don't understand it. I don't know why, but like I said, I don't know about the 1950s Canadian.
Okay, no, you said it was a penalty, though. It's not a penalty. You just can't ice the puck. They blow the whistle, they bring it back, and they have the faceoff in your zone. He said it was a penalty.
Got it. That's right. Well, it's for Jermaine in East Boston, you know.
So again,
take what you can get.
This is a youth hockey thing, though. They did implement this, where if you're shorthanded and you flip the puck down the other end, they call icing and they bring it back.
Again, this is what I thought. This is what I mistakenly thought they used to do, but they don't. But a lot of people think the NHL should go to it in an effort to increase scoring. I just think a lot of times when they try and increase scoring by messing with the power play stuff, calling more penalties, not allowing you to ice the puck, maybe you can't come out of the box, you're not creating more scoring. You're just creating more power play time. Like, that's not opening up the game. They need to open up the game, which I think they did this year. Like, I don't have the numbers in front of me. Murray, Google it. I'm kidding.
No chance.
I'm kidding. But I do think scoring's up. Like, it just feels like it is.
The league feels more open this year. Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's because the Bruins finally decided to get engaged and open up the ice a little bit and play the style they play. I think you're right that scoring is up. Like, I still wouldn't mind a tweak there or two, like, to even open it up a little bit more.
How would you do it?
I'm not against making that net a little bit bigger.
Oh, that's it. I love it. I don't know how quickly Vinny can throw up that graphic, but that net, that prototype net we've shown you here on the simulcast on NBC Sports Boston.
I'll tell you what I would...
I love that prototype net.
Tell you what I would really love to see them do, but they never would because it's an enormous expense, I think. Make the playing surface bigger.
Well, no, that they can, and they're not taking seats out. I don't think that's the issue. It's the size of the size and quality of the goalies and their pads versus the size of the net. That's it, totally. The shots have never been better. I mean, these guys, you know, these guys didn't used to shoot the puck like they do now.
Watch the Bruins.
With those sticks? So anyway, it's the size and quality of the goalie versus the net. And it used to be little guys played net. Now they're all 6'7" Finns on their knees, right, as I've told you. No, there's a prototype net out there that is the same. The poles go in at the same spot, but the posts bow out. They sort of bend a banana out on the sides and up top, and so it's sort of like this,
like a letter C. Yeah. Not quite that pronounced, but
they're bowed. Is that's right to say?
Yeah, you get it right.
And so they
think of a bow-legged person.
Exactly.
So exactly what you're doing.
The posts are bowed and the crossbar is bowed, but it goes into the net in the exact same. So you don't have to drill new holes. You don't have all that does is just. It just brings us back to where we were 20 years ago when the goalies were littler.
And you have more space.
And you just have more space to shoot.
Yeah, so you know what teams would do. Is they'd find goalies with bodies who were bowed like Bedard.
Wiggy.
Like Wiggy, exactly. Stick Wiggy in that.
Final word comes your way next with what I think is, if we grabbed it, a pretty clear case of when hosts aren't listening. To me, it felt like an all-timer.
Well, I would say, I don't know if it was quite as bad as the one you had 2 weeks ago. But it's up there.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Blood force drum!
We're gonna run him right down their throat!
Felger and
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And the final word brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you're looking for the best deal on tires, only one place to go. Town Fair Tire, the best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire.
Jim,
nobody.
Would be nobody. I want to tell everybody that you can enjoy football, food, and more with Tom Brady at the Best Buddies Challenge June 1st and June 2nd. I don't know what he serves for food, But I'm sure it's good for you. So register today at TeamTomBrady.com. That's the deal on that. What do you got on the final word, Jimmy?
Well, I was asked to Google something today. This has happened before. I come up with the wrong information, and it all goes to hell, which ultimately led to me supposedly not listening. But we'll get to that in a minute. Here was a recap of, well, me trying to do my job and getting yelled at for it.
They've talked about that to increase scoring to eliminate icing on the penalty kill. You got to work your way to the red line like in a normal situation. I'm all for that. I think that used to be the way it was for years, and then it was either the 70s Canadians. There was a Canadians team, I think, that changed all that, or maybe the Oilers. Like, it used to be you couldn't ice the puck on the power play. And if you just, Jimmy, are you listening to me? Jimmy Murray? Can you Google something?
Listen. Sure, what are you looking for?
NHL icing. And on the power play, find out what year they instituted you were allowed to ice the puck on the power play. It used to be icing. And then they said, no, you can ice the puck because it was either the 70s Canadians or maybe the 80s Oilers that were so dominant. They said, well, no, you're now allowed to ice the puck. Either way, I'm in favor of that one. When did they institute this new NHL icing, Jimmy? Did you find that?
Looks like 2005?
No.
Well, then I don't know what the hell you're looking
2005?
For. 2005? Well, you asked the question in about 52 words.
Right, that's a hard thing to Google.
It's tough to Google 52 words.
They eliminated the touch-up icing maybe in 05, but it was even way after that. What are you talking about, 05?
I don't know what the hell you're looking for. Just do it yourself when I do the headlines, then.
The touch-up icing. Jimmy Stewart's just giving you a high five. You want belly bump still? You want to come and give him the high five for that one?
I'd love to, because the computer in front of you is just so hard to use the Google machine.
It's hard to talk and Google at the same time.
I put
time.
About seven different permutations of when did they change icing in the NHL with power play. Power play change of icing in NHL. And the only thing that really came up in 2005, the NHL modified the icing rule to state that the five players on the ice for the offending team must remain on the ice for the subsequent faceoff. Is that what you're looking for?
Nope, nothing to do with the power play.
No, that's
nothing.
Not it.
Always one of my favorite things on the show. Google something, find it, wrong answer, F you, Jim. Bruins general manager.
Same.
Yeah. It's so true.
So that led to this, where, let me just say, I knew I was listening, but I remember hearing or seeing something about the WHA in the Wikipedia entry for icing, but apparently I wasn't listening.
Yeah.
And now, to tell when the hosts aren't listening.
Apparently my thing about they used to let you ice the puck on the power play never existed. That came to me in some sort of acid dream. I'm sorry. Maybe I was thinking of the WHA, the World Hockey Association, did not used to let you ice the puck on the power play.
Could be that.
So maybe it was the WHA.
I mean, you were enough of a hockey junkie as a kid to watch that stupid-ass league.
And maybe Gretzky would score three goals of power play and they were going to change it, or they did. Like, I don't know. I don't know why that was in my head. That they used to do that, but the WHA did, so maybe that's what I was thinking about. I don't know.
All right, so here's...
Go find it, though, Murray!
The 70s-era World Hockey Association never adopted the NHL rule of allowing shorthanded teams to ice the puck. Huh? Is that maybe what you're looking for? I really don't know.
Does this qualify as one hosts aren't listening?
No, I don't think so at all.
Well, I'm just looking for any answer.
Yeah, uh-huh.
This has been... to tell when the hosts aren't listening.
Oh, a clown show.
Felger and Maz.